Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. Today we have Senda, John, and myself, Ange. And we're going to talk about creating relationships for our characters inspired by Senda's recent article, Why Relationships? And a couple of my articles from last year, Making Connections and the Ties That Bind. Before we dive into the main topic, let's ask our Get to Know a Gnome question. We're going to talk about getting players emotionally invested in their characters and the game. So tell us about a time when you got caught up in the feels of a game and maybe how your character surprised you with that. Senda?
The first thing that came to my mind, and it's not actually a character, like a player character to player character reaction, which is funny because that's really what we're going to talk about today, right? But the time that a character relationship surprised me with my investment, I was playing Kagagami High and I was playing Magical Girl, because of course, like you do. And I had a... this is great. You got me to tell a gaming story. Like, here we go. and I had a tiny floating narwhal as my magical animal companion. And we had a very standard magical girl, magical animal companion relationship until we ended up at Kagagami High. And then he went off and started talking to all of these other magical animal companions. And they had like unions and... we ended up in some interesting relationship troubles, me and my magical animal companion, and he like went off because he felt that I wasn't respecting him as his time, and like he wasn't my servant, and I wasn't treating him with the level of like respect that he deserved, and we ended up like in couples therapy and stuff. It was sort of amazing, and I got really invested in that relationship. In a way that I did not expect to at all. Like at the beginning, I was like, hey, this is my animal companion. Like I sort of control them and like whatever. They're just sort of there as helpful. And then the GM kind of took it and ran. It was amazing.
I love that couples therapy for you and your magical companion.
Well, because when he turned into a human form as like the finale thing, of course we were in love, but we went through a lot of therapy first.
You did your therapy before he was somebody you could actually have a relationship with.
Yeah, because the thing is that, so I'm lucky enough to play with Camden Wright in my standard local group, and even Kagagami High, he's the guy who can get feels into everything. So he succeeded. It's good.
What about you, John?
A lot of the times, I have been really hitting the GMing thing hard. Like, I have been the GM for most things, and I think it's been about a year since I've actually played in a game in a lot of ways.
Well, we've got to fix that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think there's two people sitting here who could fix that for you.
That's fine. I am always happy to go be a player and do ridiculous things. But, you know, when I do get a chance to be a player, what I like to do is to focus on that relationship, but almost the, like, pop-up shop of relationships. Like, what can this interaction right here at this game, you know, build that up? Because a lot of times I don't get to play in long-term games if I'm a player. I go out to like Adventurers League and I'm like, oh, you've got a nice crunchy gaming system here. Let me wreck that by playing my Gaston of Monks. Like, yes, let me be a big, bold personality and come about. And but I use that to kind of focus on the other players. Like, I target one player who's maybe a little quieter, a little stuff, and like, oh, small gnome, you need to be in the middle of this fray. Come along. And through that kind of playing, through that kind of like targeting the player and bringing the player into it more, sometimes all they need was that like door to open into it. So when I do a lot of that sort of playing, I focus on some other player and how can we make that story live at the table? And that often happens in ridiculous sort of situations, you know. Unfortunately, they're usually one-shots or pop-ups. They're like very short sort of relationships. So they don't, you know, kind of have the chance to expand into couples therapy for your characters.
Like I said, that was the surprise. She said surprise. That was the one that surprised me.
The most recent one that I had like that was a small goblin who was pretending to be a human. I am a human in every way. Look at me doing my human things, you know. So I willfully failed the save to not ever realize he was actually a goblin in disguise like everybody else did. Well, yes, goblin, we should go forth. How do we do this? Like, what, or yes, human, how do we do this? You know, oh, that's a very odd way of speaking. It's a dialect. Oh, I will follow your dialect, fellow human, you know.
That's hilarious.
So yeah, so that's the way that most, you know, most of mine have come up. But you know, Angela, I know you are great for gaming stories that, you know, just here's what we did with these characters in my X-Men game. So what about you? What's your most feel-worthy story?
Surprise story.
I think the surprise for me was we have this D&D campaign that's been kind of ongoing. We basically play for a while and retire it briefly and then come back to it. And my character is she's a princess in hiding, basically. She basically ran away from an arranged marriage and became a con artist sorcerer. And it's a city campaign. The characters are all based in the slums, you know, fighting zombies and criminals and all this stuff. And we had left the city to go do a thing outside of the city. And when we came back, we found out that our bar had been burned to the ground. And our bartender was almost dead in the rubble of that. And it took me by surprise because all of a sudden, this character that's always been shirking her responsibilities, like, stood up on a piece of rubble and like, started shouting at the people that know that those who have wronged us will pay for this. You do not come against us without facing the consequences. And, like, yeah, like, that moment of just standing up and, like, oh, maybe she could be a ruler if she actually put her mind to it, just took me absolutely by surprise that was inside of her. And we eventually ended up killing the people who did that to us.
Yay!
Like you do.
Like you do. But it was like that bond that we had enough of the bond form between the PCs and with the NPCs that when that happened to us, we were all like, oh, no, you don't.
Excuse us, that's our bar.
Yeah, that's our bar. Yeah. And of course, we're rebuilding it even better. The original owner is just like, I'm not sure I want to come back.
It's fine. It's ours now.
So, Senda, tell us about your article, Why Relationships?
Right. So this is an interesting article. It was inspired by two games that I ended up playing very close together. I had the joy of being at Breakout Con in Toronto this year, which was lovely and amazing.
It was.
Yeah, I had a phenomenal time. And while I was there, I actually got into a game of Catherine Rahman's Red Carnations on a Black Grave, which is a game that I am now watching with like bated breath. And I keep asking her, like, do you have a date yet? And she keeps going, no, I'm working on it. And I'm like, I'm sorry, it's just so good. And basically, that's a game about, it's like a historical exploration of 2 months in 1871 in Paris, when the Paris Commune tried to create an egalitarian socialist state before the French army, like, came in and just literally murdered everyone, right? So it's like these 2 weeks leading up to this situation. And so as you can tell, it's sort of a tragic, very feelsy game, right? And then the game that I played then very shortly thereafter is I came back home, and then a couple days later, I finally got to play 10 Candles, which I had been wanting to play for forever. So there are these two games that are both really pressure cooker kind of situations where you know how this game is going to end, right? Like, you're not playing for the end point. You're playing to find out how you get there because everybody's going to die, right? They're just all going to die. And you know that going in. And the crazy thing was, when I was playing 10 Candles, like, it is a very intense game from a sensory perspective because you have the candles on the table and they're going out and the light is literally going out. And as those things are going out, like, then your characters start dying, right? And from a sensory perspective, Red Carnations doesn't have that. But what was funny to me playing them back to back, even though they were both amazing gaming experiences, was that I had a much stronger, like, feels reaction. Like, the intensity of my feels reaction was significantly stronger for Red Carnations. And so I was like, why was that? Like, the mechanics of 10 Candles support that kind of feeling and that kind of pressure in such an amazing, like, genius way that I was like, why were those play experiences so different for me? And I kind of thought about it, and I went on a tweet rant about it.
As you do.
Like you do. And then I'm like, clearly now I should write an article about this, right? So the thing that I came up with, like, the thing that made the most difference, I think, in terms of why my investment level and my emotion level was different in the game, was my relationships to the other characters in the game. Because in Red Carnations, I cared so intensely as the rest of these characters started dying. Like,
tears at the table kind of intensely. And in 10 Candles, it was like, oh, that was so good. But it wasn't that kind of feels on a personal level. It was, wow, that was a good story. Like, oh, that was such a good story arc for your character to end on. And now we're listening to this audio back and, oh, the feels, but like, oh, such a good, like, neatly tied up little arc that we just made. And so it was interesting because it affected me on an emotional level versus on a story completion satisfaction level, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So was the difference that in Red Carnations, you got the relationships established with the other players on a different way than in 10 Candles?
Yeah. So in 10 Candles, we didn't really have any sort of official relationships. I ended up creating a relationship with one of the other characters, which was very fun to play out, that I was his mom. And so there was like, and I was like a retired nurse, and I was like, you know, kind of slow. And so he was constantly trying to take care of me. And I was constantly, you know, trying to like tell him how proud I was of him and stuff. Like, so there were some feels there. With Red Carnations, we sat down and created this map as the beginning of the game of, like, you know, how our characters related to each other and all of that kind of stuff. And there were a lot of, like, husband-wife, close friendships and all of that kind of stuff. So there was a lot of close connections because it's a very close-knit community that you're playing in, instead of people who have been kind of tossed together by circumstances, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That actually, I think, is the crux of building good relationships in a game in a role-playing setting. Because you either have, you know, you have kind of two scenarios you're playing, either a kind of quick and intense one-shot where, like, this is the story we're going to tell. And when you do that, you do exactly like, you know, you said, like those games did, build the relationships in from the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
Or when you're doing, like, a long burn sort of campaign, people usually, with most systems, bring their characters to the table and you're like, oh, how do these fit together? How do these interact? And you have to have that time to build it up. You know, playing Fiasco, my wife and I played an old retired FBI witness protection mobster and the young, dumb kid punk in the suburban neighborhood, like Blue Velvet, you know, sort of thing. Like, I was the mobster, she was the young kid punk, and I was trying to help the character she was playing not go down a life of crime, you know, even calling in my old mob buddies to, like, burn down his house to prevent him from going into a life of crime.
Tough love.
Tough love, exactly. But you have those things that you build in over the course of the very short, hey, what are our characters going to be? I have no idea, and I have no investment in my character, so I'm going to have investment in your character and the connection between it. Compared to, oh man, I've always wanted to play this half-elf paladin. All right, so here's how they're going to be. What, you're all an evil party? Well, okay, now we're going to find out how that works over the course of a long time. You know, I think it's about whether you come with a preconceived notion or you come with a blank slate and say, oh, that actually sounds like a way cooler thing. I want to riff off of your character concept.
Well, and one of the things I covered in one of my articles from last year was that, you know, it used to be easier to just come to the table with that character with no connections and build the connections with the other PCs through play. But that was back in the days when I could play a game once or twice a week, you know, where I had the time to be focused on a single game with the same group of players multiple times a month. I ain't got time like that no more. My regular group, we meet every other week. You know, and even then, that's, you know, life gets in the way. And occasionally we're only meeting once a month.
Yeah.
So I find even for the longer term campaign play, it helps me as a player. And honestly, as a GM, when I'm setting things up for a campaign, to have some of those connections seated at the beginning. You know, like, sit down with the players and it's like, okay, tell me about why you guys, you know, how you guys are connected. You know, how are you friends? How are you, you know, do you have some mistrust here? Do you have this going on? And it's something I've worked at for a long time because I've always loved the idea of setting up the connections, but I tried probably 6 or 7 years ago to do a Firefly campaign with some friends. And I tried to do this setup where I'm like, okay, you need to have connections with two other players. Tell me about those connections. And the players had absolutely no real interest in setting up these connections. So they were the most tenuous, you know, like, oh, he bet on me when I was in a boxing match. oh, that doesn't, yeah, you know.
Like, that doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, and there were some other issues with this campaign that caused it to kind of, it didn't exactly blow up so much as I ran away and hid from it. So that it didn't continue, but it was, I tried so hard to get these connections set up and the players were so focused on their own characters that I couldn't, I've learned now how to kind of see when that is happening and draw them back out and be like, no, let's make a real connection here.
That brings up, whose narrative are you playing? Are you playing your own narrative or are you playing the group's narrative?
Right.
You know, and I think in a lot of games, it's tilted towards you're playing your own narrative. You know, character creation is the crux. So, of course, you want to play your character. Whereas in a lot of, you know, games that are focused on the sort of this experience, you're playing that experience. Your character is the secondary, you know, importance to the story overall.
Well, it's interesting because I think there's a lot of games that are baking it in now versus, I think, previously in older games and stuff, I don't think it was something that people were necessarily writing in.
Right.
It was something that you were relying on the table to produce or to do kind of a session zero or something. It wasn't explicit. And now there's a lot of games that are, and that's, you know, a lot of people probably have experience with like Bonds and Dungeon World, but also
yeah.
If you think about like Headspace where character creation, like literally my stats are my relationship or like my memories and previous experiences with these
yeah.
other people. And that is how I stat my character for character creation. Like, that's really cool.
Well, even like Pathfinder,
yeah.
Some of their later products have brought, like, I believe there's a campaign book. And in that has a lot of different neat rules on how to create a background and pull these characters together. And, like, I randomly rolled. It's like, it was like, what the hell? We're creating these characters. I randomly rolled on this table, and I ended up with a twin sibling. And I looked across the table at Chris, and I'm like, hey, you want to be my twin brother? And he's like, we're both playing dwarves, right? And he's like, yeah, okay. So I now have a twin brother that has, like,
yeah.
Escalated the investment into that game up a notch.
I want to
yes.
hear that game, but where you're not both dwarves, where it's the Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger twins.
I will say I have designed one-shot characters for a D&D game where it was two brothers. One was a half-orc, one was a half-elf.
All right.
Yeah.
You know, and then people are always like, but you don't even look alike. We have the same eyes!
Oh.
That's fantastic. So one of the things I did in my article was basically throw out some tools for, like, if it's not baked into your game, right? Like, and one of the things that I threw in there was, and you had previously written a really awesome, like, character connection sheet in one of your previous articles, so, like, that's in there. But basically, you know, it's a lot about asking questions, right? And I love leading questions, and I love them in character creation, and I love them in game, because you can make it so that, like you were saying with that campaign where people were like, oh, I don't know, I bumped into him at the grocery store. Like, that's not an option. Then you can ask them things like, oh, which one of these people is your business partner and why don't you quite trust them? Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, they can't wiggle out of that one. Like,
and you know, like, I think that's why more traditional longer form games have eschewed away from it. Like, do you want to bake in potential party conflicts right from the get-go? Because I know some of the people that I played with, I'm like, look, I don't want to make this any harder. Like, I'm already trying to not strangle you for, like, trying to make it all about you here. If there were a built-in character reason for me to want to do that, it would be a little harder to play in that game. But if you have the right group of players, oh, heck yeah, let's play out your slow turn to evil, and I will choose to blatantly ignore these things you're doing.
Yes.
You know, but when you have an adversarial GM versus player connection rather than a narrative, yeah, it's gonna, you know, like you said, the French Revolution one, it's
yep.
gonna all, you're all dead. Like, that's gonna happen. How do
well,
you get there?
That, yeah, I mean, that's just what that game is. I mean, but I think there's a certain amount of this, no matter what you're playing, that is about the people that you're playing with, the kind of social contract you have with those people. And honestly, there's a level of safety, right?
Oh, yeah.
You have to incorporate that stuff so that you can be like, I'm comfortable with the fact that you're turning evil as a player. And like my character can ignore it because I'm not going to strangle you, player, when you decide to come in and like murder everyone. Like
right. this is part of why when I often, you know, whether it's a one, you know, like a PBTA one shot I'm setting up or a campaign, one of the things I lay down the law about when I start the game is you guys already work together.
Yeah.
You know, you guys already have a reason to work together. We're not doing the you're in a tavern and all of a sudden things start happening. And I hope you guys play nicely. No, we're actually, you guys work together as a team. Let's establish why this team works together.
Yeah.
And go from there. And that's one of the reasons why I like doing the relationship establishments. Because, yeah, some of them can add a little bit of tension to the game. But when I've already laid down the law that you work together, you know, you are together for a reason. This is just another aspect of that. And maybe at the end of the game, your character, you know, I had this happen in a Monster of the Week one shot where the character found out that the reason she had suffered her whole life was because her aunt had pissed off a fae that had decided to torture her instead of her aunt. And when she discovered this, she threw down her magical weapon and just walked off into the night down the street to sad music.
I mean, you know, yeah.
That was the way the session ended.
You get to do that in a one shot. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's a campaign, it's like, okay, we got to now figure out why your character comes back or why your character stays involved with things, or we get to make a new character. Your choice.
Right. I mean, there is definitely something to be said for you can have those relationships between your characters. Like, I love playing tangled and messy relationships with characters, but there does have to be a really strong reason. Mm-hmm. And you as an individual, as well as the group, are responsible for having the commitment to that responsibility, whatever it is that you create as a group. That is the reason you show up every day, right? Like, as a character.
Yeah.
It has to be a balance between, you know, understanding your character's motivations and understanding the meta reasons you need to keep your character involved in the game.
Right.
And even understanding the meta reasons you have fun personally.
Yeah.
One of my first characters was a dumb fighter, and the clever priest, you know, was like, "Oh, son, have you paid your monster tax? My monster tax? Yeah. You've been killing everything. You mean you haven't been paying tax on all the loot you've gotten from dealing the killing blow to these monsters? All right, I'm going to play this up. Like, that's more fun. I knew that player wasn't out to, like, completely screw me over and take away all my money. But, you know, it got to play into his character thing. It got to play into my character thing. We both got spotlight time.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the meta fun, you know, rather than the, woot, I got 1,500 experience, 500 gold from this. That was a different type of fun.
Yeah.
But we were all on board for that. And if you don't have the players who are all on board for like, yes, let's play this out, it's going to be ridiculous, it becomes a little harder to do that unless the game is supporting and propping that up.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, I think we've said a lot of different things. I think we can probably move into our outro at this point. Unless either of you has one last thing you want to say about building character relationships.
Use Legos.
I like leading questions. Use leading questions.
Yeah, use leading questions. I was just going to say my coworker got a phone case that's Lego.
What?
And he could put Lego on it. It's really awesome.
That's so
anyway, cool. Special thanks to our Patreon backers, awesome GNOME supporters like Bob Queck, Eric Heimel, and Evan Harrison Cast. I want three names too.
I have lots of names. Keep going.
Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the GNOME Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link to the on the GNOME Stew website to the GNOME Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by Spit in a Tube, where you too can find out that your family genetics are pretty much exactly what you expected, but just might have something a little more surprising in there. Someone's eventually going to find out they're part alien, right? If you're enjoying the GnomeCast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's one to check out.
Hobbs gets together with various friends from the OSR, where they talk about the games they play, a little about themselves, some OSR-related topic, and sometimes a state of the OSR where Hobbs puts down his Mr. Rogers persona and gets all opinionated. Get old school with Hobbs and the friends of the OSR.
And
Don't forget that the Queen City Conquest Kickstarter is going on right now, and there's going to be tons of gnomes at this awesome little convention in Buffalo, New York.
So many gnomes.
I'll be there too.
Me too.
What?
So if you want to come hang out and play some games with some of the gnomes from the Gnome Stew, more even than just us three, you have just a couple of days left until May 6th from the date that this episode drops.
So go check it out, and we will hope to see you there.
I'll kill you with the Trask.
And it's an awesome Trask. It comes in like a carrying case and everything.
It is an awesome Trask. You totally want to try your hand at beating the Trask. Go for it. Do it. You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Senda and John, where else can we find you on the internet?
Every time this happens, I'm like, this is why I have separate Twitter accounts for my other shows. I'm sorry, it's like such a thing. You can find me at Idella Mifflin on Twitter, which is IDELLAMITHLYNND. And of course, you can find me on my other podcast, She's a Super Geek, and Pandas Talking Games with Phil, who is also a gnome. And I think that is pretty much it. John, how about you?
Well, you can find me wherever good John Arcadians are bartered. We're no longer sold because of trade tariffs. But any place that it says John Arcadian, 9 times out of 10, that is me. What about you, Ange? Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13. And also hanging about in the various Misdirected Mark communities that are out and about places. So, John, did we avoid the stew this week?
You know, I'm going to say yes, but only because our character relationships are so strong.
Nice.